ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you managed to get a break, how did it go? Bit of sun on your face, read a book or two, and come to think of it, gosh, you slept like a log. But now that you're coming back to work, you've stopped sleeping again. The thought of work feels heavy. There is a term for this and a way to help you through it. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong with ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. This feeling of dread you might be experiencing is called hopelessness. In this episode, you'll hear why hope is the lever to get you back into the swing of things. Jen Fisher is a workplace wellbeing expert. She was the first chief wellbeing officer in the professional services industry, and her new book is called Hope is the Strategy. Hello, Jen.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you.
Now, Jen, if I had to describe 2025, I would probably use the term exhausting. And I do know many people who actually got to burnout stage. So the term you use for this is hopelessness. What is this for you?
I believe a lot of what we're seeing when it comes to workplace burnout is either hopelessness, workplace hopelessness, or burnout that has been created by, you know, this consistent or chronic level of hopelessness, if you will. And so what do I mean when I say hopelessness? I think about it in the context of the workplace is tomorrow is not going to be better than today, right? Nothing that I do matters. I don't feel valued here. I don't understand how my work is having an impact. You know, I just watched, you know, five of my friends get laid off. I might be next, but now I have to do all of their work, right? Like all of these things are just signals to people, right? To say like, wow, what I do and who I am doesn't really matter to this organization. And if I go away tomorrow, they will just replace me. You know, so why am I even going to try? Why am I even going to care? I'm going to show up. I'm going to go through the motions. And that's not what any leader wants. I mean, when I talk to leaders, you know, when they challenge me on this idea of hopeful organizations, I say, well, would you rather be the leader of a hopeful organization or the leader of a hopeless organization? And that tends to kind of change their mind and their mood because nobody wants to lead an organization that is hopeless because the outcomes of that are, you know, you don't engage with each other, right? You don't collaborate, you don't innovate, you're not engaged, you know, things like quiet quitting, you know, people just showing up and doing the bare minimum are very prevalent because there's a lack of trust. And another Gallup study, their global report actually said the number one thing that people are looking for from their leaders worldwide is actually hope. And that was by a wide margin, it outranked trust, which is fascinating. And what they said was that trust maintains the status quo. Hope is what allows people to move forward. And so if people are feeling hopeless, they're not moving forward. They're staying stuck in the same place. And staying stuck in the same place leads to burnout.
What's the relationship then between hope and hopelessness?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. When I first set out to write the book, actually, I got almost all the way through the book and did not plan to write about hopelessness because I was like, why would I write about hopelessness when I'm writing a book about hope? And then I realized that, you know, I have to write about hopelessness. Number one, because it's a very real experience and a lot of people are experiencing hopelessness. And I think what's important for people to understand about hopelessness and hope is that they can actually coexist. You know, it's not everything is all bad and not everything is all good, right? And so you can be hopeless about kind of broader macro issues, things that are outside of your control, decisions that are being made that, you know, challenge kind of who you are as a person or what your beliefs are. But you can also feel a lot of hope about things that you are doing inside of your team, you know, successes that you and your team are having, you know, ways that you and your team are supporting one another. Those generate hope. And we need to kind of focus on those micro actions and those micro behaviors, because they are contagious and they do generate more and more hope. And so I think we tend to, it's natural as human beings, is kind of try, we focus on what's wrong and what's broken, oftentimes the things that are out of our control, and that just breeds kind of restlessness and languishing, and you know, and we get annoyed and pissed off. Instead of kind of saying, okay, I get it. Like, there's a lot of things that are going on that are challenging, that are kind of making me feel hopeless. But let me look at the things that I can actually control to help me cultivate and generate some hope in my life.
And there's actually an academic backbone to hope. In your book, you talk about C.R. Snyder's hope theory. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. So C.R. Snyder is, you know, I and probably many others consider him to be the godfather of hope and hope theory. And so he's really the first one that came out and said, you know, hope is not this wishy-washy thing. It's not wishful thinking. It's not positive vibes only. It's not an ignoring of reality. And I think for a lot of us, myself included, you know, I grew up in a world that told me, like, hope is not a strategy. You know, like, you need to have concrete metrics and you need to have, but what C.R. Snyder says and what his research shows is that what we thought hope was, or what we were taught that hope was, is actually woefully inaccurate. And so what he says in the science behind it is that, you know, hope requires action. So hope requires three things. Those things are setting a goal. So knowing, you know, recognizing and acknowledging where you are, so not denying reality, but also knowing where you want to go. So setting a goal. And then the second thing is identifying multiple pathways in which you could reach that goal. And this is, I think, the most important piece of hope and in cultivating and generating hope, is because if you identify multiple ways in which you can reach a goal, if you go down one pathway, or you go, you know, you start down, you know, one way in which you're going to reach this goal, and you get stuck or you reach a barrier, you don't give up, or you don't, you know, kind of sit there and stew. You're like, oh, wait, I've identified two more ways in which I can reach this goal. And then third, which is also really important, to cultivate hope, to have hope and be hopeful, you have to set a goal that is realistic, that you can, you personally can do something about. You have to have the agency and ability to take the next step forward, to affect change, to, you know, move from point A to point B. And so it's not, you know, hey, I'm going to win the lottery and, you know, kick my feet back and sit on the couch and do nothing. You know, that's wishful thinking. That's potentially false hope. I mean, maybe if you win, you buy a lottery ticket and you win, that's just dumb luck. But that's not what actual, like, realistic hope requires this process. And that's why I named the book Hope is the Strategy, because it actually is a cognitive process that is very strategic and requires you to get pretty granular in your thinking and in your actions towards, you know, achieving goals, towards making tomorrow better than today.
Do you get any pushback from people saying, what is the role of hope? That is, even though you're saying it's not wishful thinking, it just doesn't feel like it belongs in the workplace?
Yeah, I get lots of pushback, and I love it. And it's the reason why I named the book the way that I did, because I knew I would get that pushback. And so what do I say to that? Okay, I sit with, you know, a leader of an organization, and I tell them, you know, walk me through your transformation strategy, or walk me through your leadership strategy. What is it that you're trying to accomplish? And then we do that, and I say, okay, and now you need a hope strategy. And you don't have to call it a hope strategy, but the point being that without being able to get people to believe in your strategy, believe that your strategy is going to make things better for them, your strategy isn't going to go very far. You need people to get on board. You need people to believe in it. And so I think when we talk about it in those terms, it's an engagement strategy. It's a, how do you motivate and inspire those that work in your organization to help you achieve the goals that you've set out for the organization? If everyone's burnt out, languishing and feeling hopeless, you're going to have a really hard time, you know, executing on that strategy that you just laid out. And so when I put it in those terms, people are like, they kind of lean in and they're like, oh, wait, now, like, tell me more. How do I go about this? How do I understand if my organization is hopeful or hopeless? And what do I do about it?
Let's go a deeper level down then to really bring this to life. So let's say I do have a strategy and I feel, I sense that there is a lack of hope in this organization. Yeah. So it's not going to land well and it's not going to be implemented. So what are the key indicators that show me that actually there is a sense of hopelessness or a lack of hope?
You know, if you're presenting your strategy and everyone's looking down and no one's asking questions or no one's challenging you, or people are just kind of nodding their heads and feeling like, you know, people are just kind of going through the motions, I think those are some key indicators that there's a lack of buy-in. There's a lack of hope in what it is that you're proffering. I mean, as a leader, when you put something forward, when you put a strategy forward, you want to create the environment for people to, you know, share their perspectives, question your ideas, add on to your ideas, right? You never want it to be the kind of thing where you're kind of shoving a strategy down everyone's throat that they don't believe in. And so if people aren't adding on or asking questions or challenging some of the thinking, you would score kind of pretty high on the lack of hope in your organization. And in my book, I do have a hope audit that you can do at the individual, team, and organizational level that pick up on some of those key indicators. A lot of it is behavior driven. Are people behaving in a way that they didn't used to behave, or are they just kind of silent and going through the motions? Those are really big indicators.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and my guest is workplace wellbeing expert Jen Fisher. And later, you'll hear about one of Jen's daily hope practices that you can try for yourself. What's a hope dealer, and how do I get one?
So a hope dealer, so that actually, which is kind of funny, Napoleon is the one that is most credited with the quote that said leaders should be dealers in hope. And so perhaps at some point in his leadership journey, he was a hope dealer, but maybe not towards the end so much. But I just really like that, because I think that that's the most important role for a leader, is to cultivate, you know, environments where people feel hopeful, where they feel like what they're doing matters, where they feel like they are valued and they are known and they are seen. And that is the role of a leader. I think, you know, one thing we haven't touched on is, and this is probably one of the things that's driving a lot of the hopelessness, the messaging around artificial intelligence. Right. If you look at all of the messaging around artificial intelligence right now, it's all fear-based. AI is coming for our jobs. We're all going to be unemployed. Right. And so, but, you know, like if you ask me, okay, what's a great hope strategy? Like our language matters, you know, the way that we communicate, the words that we use can either create hope. I call them hope builders or hope killers. And that's really important for leaders, because leaders are the ones that are responsible for communicating to people. And so we have to understand and be aware of the way that our actions and our words hit people, how they are perceived, and what types of emotions do they create? Do they create positive emotions? Do they create negative emotions? And so to me, that is, you know, a hope dealer is someone that is very kind of tuned in on, you know, what are the possibilities here? How can I help people cultivate hope in their lives and in their work lives, so that, you know, our organization will be more successful, more innovative, more collaborative, all the things that we want within an organization. Hope actually delivers that.
Have you got an example of someone who managed to become a hope dealer and changed not only their leadership, but the effect on the organization, Jen?
So I do have some case studies. One of my favorite stories of a hopeful leader is a global telecom company. And it was the new CEO. And, you know, he was kind of doing his tour around the globe to the local stores. And, you know, he noticed, I think he was like in Phoenix, Arizona, and it was, I don't know, like July in Phoenix, and all of the like graphics and everything in the store were like winter snow. Well, Phoenix is really, really hot. They very rarely, if ever, have snow. And he was like, well, why is this? And so he started to kind of dig into it. And he realized that all of the stores across the globe look exactly the same. They, you know, all of the, you know, kind of marketing materials, graphics, music that gets played, all of that was being pushed from corporate. So every store was cookie cutter. And he was like, no, we want to be a community store. We want to fit in with the community. And so what he did was he gave the managers of each store the agency. He gave them the decision rights. They had a certain budget. They could create, you know, they could have local artists create murals. They got to choose the music that they played in the store. I mean, that is a perfect example of a Hope Dealer, you know. So he gave the managers these decision rights. This is your store. This is your community. Make it something that becomes, you know, a community store, right? He gave people, you know, a goal. And he said, it's you figure out how to get it done. I have your back. You have my full support. And he gave them the agency to get it done. And I just love that story.
What questions does a Hope Dealer ask then to get to that place?
I think some of the top things that we hear that we've all said, that I've definitely said, is, you know, that are hope killers, if you will. So not Hope Dealer behaviors is that's not the way we do things here, or, you know, we've tried that before and it didn't work. And so, you know, outwardly, you're probably thinking, well, like, what's wrong with that? That feels like a very responsible thing to do or say as a leader, right? If we tell people, like, don't waste your time, that's not the way we do things here, right? Or don't waste your time trying that because we already tried it and it didn't work. That seems like a very responsible thing to do. And that was the experience that I had. I thought I was being a responsible leader. But really what you're telling people is, like, don't come up with any new or innovative ideas because I have all the answers and we have it all figured out. And so instead of saying, like, that's not the way we do things here, you can ask questions like, what is it that excites you about this approach? So get curious, ask, you know, what and why questions to people. You know, a Hope Dealer asks questions that are possibility related, like what might we achieve if we do it this way? What is it that I'm not thinking about? Or what's the experience that you're having that I'm not having, right? And get really curious as to why somebody came up with this idea or is coming forward with this idea, as opposed to, you know, telling them why it won't work. And that doesn't mean as a leader you have to take every idea that gets, you know, put before you. That's not what I'm saying. But getting curious as to what you can learn, because the people doing the work, having the day-to-day experience, have a lot more ideas about how to do something differently or more effectively or in a way that is helpful to them and their well-being. And we just don't get curious. We kind of shut them down and say, oh no, we've done that before, or we don't do that here, you know? Instead of having a 3 to 5 minute conversation to just learn a little bit more, you might be surprised.
Is it a case that you can ask the questions first about the possibilities without actually feeling hope at the start, and it might get you there by the end?
I think so. Yeah. I'm not hopeful all the time. No one is, right? I mean, we're all human. And I do think that asking ourselves and others those questions should and can lead to creating hope. I mean, that's part of the process of, like, thinking, I'm stuck, I have tunnel vision. What questions can I ask to get me to think differently or to get me to a different space? So absolutely.
So each week we ask our guests to give us some tips that This Working Life has contrived for themselves. So it's a bit of an experiment. We call it a sprint, and it's called Try This. So Jen, can you please give us some things to try this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'll give you two of my favorite hope building exercises. One you can do, and both of them actually, you can do as an individual, you can do them as a team, but I call it hope spotting. And so I think you know, especially when we're feeling hopeless or exhausted or burnt out, it's really easy to gravitate towards the negative, to gravitate towards the things that went wrong or the things that aren't going right. And we tend to lose sight of the good when there is still a lot of good. And so hope spotting is when something happens that you didn't expect, right? You went into a meeting that you thought wasn't going to go well, and it went a lot better than you thought. Typically, when it goes a lot better than you thought, we walk out and we're like, well, that's done. And we don't spend any time, you know, thinking about it because it went well. If it went bad, we would ruminate on it and beat ourselves up on all the things that went wrong. But we don't do that when things go well. And so hope spotting is all about, you know, what actually went well. Did a new team member that just joined, you know, bring forward an idea? You know, did they speak up when they hadn't spoken up before? So things that are kind of, you know, unexpected or went a different way than you thought it was would. Can you have the intention of calling those out either openly in a group or just taking a minute to acknowledge those things yourself? And then you won't get stuck in the cycle of negativity. The second one is I call it the three pathways exercise. And so we talked about C.R. Snyder and the hope theory. So setting the goal, identifying the pathways, and then knowing your agency. And so the three pathways exercise is, okay, if I'm feeling stuck or I have a new goal that I've set, making sure that I identify those three pathways. Because usually what happens is we identify one and we charge straight ahead. We don't take the time to say, okay, there's multiple ways in which I can get there. And so yes. I think taking those extra few minutes to identify those multiple pathways so that if you do get stuck, you're like, okay, well, that was interesting. I'm going to shift to this other thing.
And Jen, I did really love how you shared your own personal daily practice of cultivating hope. Would you mind sharing that with us?
We've all heard about a gratitude journal. For me, I keep a hope journal, right? And so I think gratitude is incredibly important. But, you know, the thing with gratitude is it's kind of the typical things like I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for a roof over my head. And all of those things are important. I'm a big believer in gratitude. But I think hope journaling, you know, gets me in the mindset to say like, oh, what are the things that happened today or happened this week that are helping me continue to cultivate and maintain my hope? And so that is one of my favorite practices. I have a lot and I talk about a lot of them in the book.
Now, what is the Hope Strategist Toolkit, please, Jen?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's an entire chapter in the book that's called the Hope Strategist Toolkit that has all kinds of resources for you, from the Hope Audit to all kinds of different exercises that you can do as an individual to cultivate your own hope, that you can do as a team, you can do as an organization. You talked about the different measurement tools. I also talk about a bunch of books that have been inspirational for me in Inspiring Hope, that is kind of like, you know, Jen's personal bookshelf. and all of that, I even have something in there that's a team meeting template that's like a hopeful team meeting, right? And how the way you can structure meetings and activities that you can do in meetings. And we're going to be sharing some of that with all of you.
Great. So if you email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au, then we will send you a couple of the frameworks from Jen's The Hope Strategist Toolkit. Thank you so much for joining us, Jen.
Thank you for having me. This was a great conversation.
Back at ya. Jen Fisher is a workplace wellbeing expert and the author of Hope is the Strategy. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Matthew Sigley on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast and share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.